how to design gates, right? So if you have a description of the Hamiltonians, how do you find a pulse sequence Q which causes the system at time capital T to be equal to the desired unitary? Today we're going to sort of do the next step. So if you have a physical implementation of a gate, and you know that it's not perfect, it's never going to be perfect, how do you characterize the imperfection? And you want to do the characterization carefully, robustly, and scalably, because you don't want right. You know that your state preparation isn't going to be perfect. You know that your measurement operation isn't going to be perfect, and you know that your gates aren't going to be perfect. And if your gates are really good, these three things combined makes it really hard to sort of figure out a way of decoupling the error of your measurement and your state preparation from the error of your gates. And in a long computation, it's often going to be the error of the gates that sort of dominate the total errors. So today we're going to talk about efficient characterization. Of quantum gates, with this thing called randomized benchmarking. So randomized benchmarking as a characterization tool is about 12 years old at this point. It was sort of using twirling, as we'll see, sort of Joseph Emerson and et al. In about 2005, who sort of came up with the base ideas, and then these ideas grew and pieces were added on, and it's still today an active area of research. There are papers every week about improving these protocols and making new protocols that measure different things. So it's still a work in progress. And today what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the most basic protocol with the most basic error model. But it's still a very important thing to look at. So I'm going to begin by writing down what the protocol is. And then I will follow up by telling you why it works, which is not obvious if you just see the protocol itself. So so suppose we have a set of unitaries, n of them. And we're going to suppose that it's a finite group. So if you multiply any two of them together, you get another one back. And you can invert any of them, and it's still in the set. And we're going to assume, so it's a set of unitaries. And we're going to assume that it's also this thing called a two-design. I'll tell you what a two-design is in a bit. But for now, just think of a two-design as unitaries, which are sort of evenly spread out through the unitary manifold. So they're sort of maybe equidistant or something from each other. And they sort of encapsulate all of the unitaries. And then some notation. So we're going to use this script EU acting on rho. So this is just notation for conjugation by the corresponding unitary. And we're going to put a tilde on top to denote the to denote the what we actually do in the lab when we try to perform UN, we perform UN tilde. And we're going to use an error model, which is it's often the most well-studied error model because it's the simplest, but it's still important. And it's called the gate independent error model. And it does just what the name says. What it says is that the physical implementation of UN is equal to some error map composed with the ideal version of UN. Right? So the physical version is just the ideal version composed with some lambda. And it's independent because every gate sees the same error map. Here?
Yeah, and I can, you have two tildes.
Oh, thank you, yeah, you're right. No squiggle there. All right. So ideally, lambda is going to be equal to identity. And it is some quantum channel. So it's any CPTP map. OK, so here's the protocol. Which we abbreviate as RB for randomized benchmarking. So the first step is pick a bunch of indices from 1 to n. Randomly and uniformly. Then, since it's a group, what we're allowed to do is multiply all the corresponding unitaries together. That's still going to be in our set. It's just going to be one of them. And we're going to let ik plus 1 be the index which causes the whole sequence to be identity, right? So we picked these ones randomly, and then we specifically chose this one to invert all of those, and we know it's possible because it's a group. And then the third step is the experimental step. So we are going to experimentally measure this I should write it like this, this expectation value. So what we've done here is we've taken our initial state, applied all of the imperfect versions of our gates, which we can do, And then we've measured the operator E naught. And this is an expectation value of the resulting state from this with E naught. And we're going to say that ideally, E naught is rho naught is 0. So what we're trying to do is prepare the 0 state and measure the 0 state. And what we're also trying to do is implement the identity gate. So ideally, this should be equal to 1, right? Because all of this will be the identity gate. Ideally, this will be 0. This will be 0, trace of 0, 0, or is 1. OK. So then we're going to take these three steps, and we're going to pick a new random sequence. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to repeat that L times. And then we're going to let Q be the mean of these results. Then we're going to repeat this all for multiple values of k. So k here is the sequence length. So maybe we'll start with k is 1, then do k is 2, then do k is 3, and then repeat a node to maybe k is 100. And this is what we'll see. So on the x-axis, I'll plot the index k. And on the y-axis, I'll plot qk. We'll see an exponential decay. This is, if you stare at this formula, it's not super surprising, right? The bigger k is, the more gates you're putting in a row. The more gates you're putting in a row, the more error you're introducing in your measurement. You know the ideal value is flat and equal to 1. So you see an exponential decay away from the ideal value. And this curve is given by a p to the k plus b. So this is a, this is a plus b. And the reason we like this a lot, right? This is kind of a complicated protocol. But the reason why basically every experimental group who's interested in great gates uses this protocol is because of the following. A and B depend only on our imperfect measurement and our imperfect state preparation. And then the average gate fidelity of our error map is a simple function of the decay constant. Right? So if we just fit that curve, we can back out what p is. And then we plug that value of p into this formula, and it tells us the average fidelity of our error. So what it's telling us is how bad our gates are under this noise model. And I'll explain exactly what average gate fidelity is in a sec, but basically it's a number between 1 over d and 1, and when it's equal to 1, that means the error is identity. So as I mentioned above, it's spam-free. So it's spam stands for state preparation and measurement error. So it's spam error-free. It's scalable. Right, so the overhead of running this protocol scales polynomially with the number of qubits, so there's no exponential blow up when you add more qubits. And the other thing is, one thing you might be concerned about is that step where you pick ik plus 1, right? Because you had to, in order to pick ik plus 1, you had to multiply all of these operators together, and then you had to find their inverse. If you have a lot of qubits, this might be classically very hard, because the space of Hilbert, or Hilbert space, is exponentially large. What it turns out is that it's always possible to pick a unitary two-design group which is efficiently classically simulatable. So that's not a problem.
So what do you mean by spam?
So spam stands for state preparation and measurement error. Okay. Right, so that's what it is, but at this point it sort of just seems like magic as to why this works. So now for the remaining 40 minutes, we'll try to get through that and see if we have enough time. Okay, so we'll start by defining a few of the things that we used. So the first thing we'll need to know is exactly what we mean by average gate fidelity. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our gate, we're going to feed it a pure state, and then we're going to, we sort of want this gate to be close to the identity, so we're going to take the overlap with the same pure state, and ideally this will be equal to 1. But we want it to work well on average for every pure state, so we're going to take the average over all possible pure states. Right, so the best you can possibly do is make the integrand 1 everywhere, so it's upper bounded by 1. The worst you can possibly do is put a terrible channel in there. The worst channel out there is the one that takes your state, throws it out the window, and replaces it with the fully mixed state, right? So that's called the completely depolarizing channel. So in that case, psi or lambda of psi would be equal to identity over the dimension. And then if you take this trace, you're going to get that the integrand is constantly equal to 1 over d. Yeah. And we're integrating over over all states. You may not have seen integrals of this form. I'm just sort of going to brush over it and ask you to believe that it obeys properties you might expect it to believe. But it's you're defining a measure over states that's sort of invariant with rotations. So the area of a region doesn't change if you rotate it by unitary. And that's the sort of integration you get if you apply that. Okay. So now we're going to massage this definition a bit to put it in a form that's going to help us later. So we're integrating over all possible pure states. What we could alternatively do, instead of integrating over all pure states, we could pick a fixed state and then multiply it by a random unitary. And that's going to give us a random pure state, right? So integrating over all pure states is the same thing as this, right? So I'm going to ask you just to believe this statement. But what we've done is instead of integrating over all pure states, we're now integrating over all unitaries. And we have a fixed state. And we're sort of accessing all possible pure states by the fact that we're multiplying a fixed state by a random unitary. And now we can move some of the action of the integral into this expectation. So we have, and now I'm going to rewrite this expression in terms of u tildes, right? So sorry, not u tilde, script u of rho is just conjugation by u. So if we do that, then this expression looks like first we apply u dagger, then we apply lambda, and then we apply u. We act it on the state psi. This formula holds for any pure state psi. And then if we look at this expression, we can sort of see all we've done is define a new map. We've defined a new map by taking lambda, conjugating it by script u, and then integrating over all u. So we can rewrite this as psi that, where we have defined this new map. So our new map, lambda average, is it's kind of like our old map lambda, except we've sort of smeared it by all sorts of unitaries, both on the input and on the output. So it's a version of lambda which we have heavily symmetrized by the unitary group.
Question?
Yes.
In what sense is it an average? A lambda average.
Sorry, can you?
In what sense is it an average?
In what sense is it an average? It's an average in the sense that we are Yeah, I mean, you could pick a different word if you really wanted to. You could pick the word symmetrized. But it's called a motion reversal. So we take the input state, we act on it u, then we do lambda, then we do the inverse of u. So we've sort of motion reversed the input state on the input and the output. And then we've averaged over all things. And what we get is the following fact, which will maybe help show this point explicitly. So if we do this process, we always end up with a channel of this form. So a channel which, with some probability, keeps your input state, and with the remaining probability, gives you the completely mixed state. And you can sort of see from this, the fact that this quantity is constant for any input state sort of leads you to believe that something like this might be true, right? This quantity doesn't change no matter what pure state you give it. So it probably has a lot of symmetry. But the fact that really makes this happen is if we conjugate this average map by any unitary, then it's equal to itself. So it's invariant under unitary conjugation. And then this theorem, Schur's lemma for representation theory, tells us that any channel which has this property has to be of this form. Right, so now that we have a nice formula for what this average map is, we can plug it back into FG. And see what the answer is. Right, so we're just going to apply this formula here. So this is this is equal to p times psi plus 1 minus p identity over d psi. And then if we sandwich the psi here, we get 1. And if we sandwich the psi over here, we get 1 over d. So that's where this formula is coming from, right? So this decay curve is going to turn out to be the p from the depolarizing channel. Okay. Good. So I've given you the first definition that we used here that maybe you didn't know, average gate fidelity. And now I'll give you the second definition that you probably didn't know. What is a two design? So a unitary two design is a set of unitaries such that the following is true. If we take a function f and we integrate it over all unitaries, this is usually a hard thing to do, right? Unless your function f is very simple, doing this sort of integral is quite tedious or impossible. What a unitary two design lets you do is replace this integral with the sum. So instead of having to average over all possible unitaries, you only have to average over the unitaries in your two design. But this is too good to be true, right? How are you going to capture the continuous nature of the unitary group with only a certain number? So the caveat is it only works when f is a polynomial of degree 2 or less. When so you can extend this definition to a unitary t-design where you have polynomials of higher degree. But for us, all we need is a two-design because, actually, I'll give you an example first just to make, so first of all, we know of unitary two-designs in every dimension, in every finite dimension. And more, so the Clifford group, I don't know, have you heard of the Clifford group? Okay, so the Clifford group is a unitary two design. It's actually a unitary three design in dimensions three and higher, I think. So in D equals 2, if you take the Hadamard and the T gate, which is the square root of Z, and you generate the group from these two elements, you end up with 24 members. So this is the D equals 2 Clifford group, and it has 24 members. In D equals 3, you get 216 members. In D equals 4, so 2 qubits, you get like 10,000 members. So the number grows fast. Okay. So I guess the reason we introduced two designs is because we have an integral of interest, which is the definition of lambda average. So we can alternately write lambda average as a sum over a two design instead of an integral over the unitary group. Okay. So now we have enough tools to get back to the protocol. So given our sequence of indices where the last index was chosen to invert the previous indices, let U tilde be equal to the composition of the imperfect gates. And now we're going to do a bunch of rearrangement, which gets us somewhere very nice, even though it looks kind of silly at first. So we have the following. So ui vector. So let's first sub in our gate independent noise model. So this is going to be equal to lambda composed with ui k plus 1 composed with lambda composed with ui k composed with lambda ui 2 lambda ui 1. Then I'm going to set J1 equal to I1. In this moment, everything is the same. And right here, I'm going to insert an identity operation. So I'm going to put the ideal I1 gate followed by the ideal inversion of the one gate, lambda u, I guess I should call it J1. And now I have this conjugation structure over here, right? And I'm going for conjugation structure just because it's popping up all over the place. But now I have this new composition over here. But I know that my two design is also a group. So I know that this corresponds to some other element, which I'm going to call uj2. And then I'm going to rinse and repeat. So this is lambda ui k plus 1 dot 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 lambda ui 3. I'm going to multiply by uj2 and uj2 inverse. Lambda uj2. Then over here I had uj1 inverse lambda uj1. So now I have one of these conjugations here. I have one of these conjugations here. Now I have two elements in a row, and I'm going to call this uj3. And I can just keep going all the way to the end. But of course, I can't go past here, because there's nothing on this side to cancel out. So I'm going to end up with an extra lambda over here. And then I'll end up with ui k plus 1 composed with uj k composed with uj k inverse lambda uj k Right, so I have conjugation units here, dot, 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 here, here. And then I have some leftover bits, which I can't cancel out. However, if we recall the protocol, and we expand this out, so UJ2 was UI2 times UI1. UJ3 was UI3 times UI2 times UI1. UJK is, if you go through it, is equal to UIK dot 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 UI1. So it's the progressive multiplication of all of the UIs. And then by choice of indices, this is equal to, exactly equal to identity. So this term goes away. Yes. Yeah. If you go through what we've been doing here, what we're doing is every time we add a new j, we're just taking the previous j and the next I, right? So iteratively, you just keep tacking on the i's, so you end up with this for ujk. Okay, so that's what happens with a single sequence. And now what we're going to do is we're going to average over all sequences. So set I k to be all of those indices. Such that uik plus 1 all of those indices which are relevant to the randomized benchmarking protocol notice that we have n to the k of them. Right? The reason is because we can choose i1 arbitrarily, n choices for i2, n choices for n3, n choices all the way to the ik. But then ik1 is uniquely fixed. And so there are n to the k possible sequences. And now we define uk to be the average over all sequences from the set. Then we plug in the formula that we found. That's, of course, just equal to j. Okay, so now we're going to do a slightly subtle setup. It's not too bad, but it's slightly subtle. We're going to notice that, so here we have i's, and here we have j's. But our i's are, the first k components of our i's are completely random. And it doesn't matter the order we can shuffle them in. So over here, right? Well, okay, I'll start over here. J1 is obviously cycling through all n possible unitaries, right? Because J1 is equal to I1. J2 is also cycling through all possible unitaries, because all we've done is translate the group by UI1. Multiplicatively translate the group. UJK is also cycling through all possible n unitaries, because all we've done is translate the group by UJK minus 1. So what we can do is we can pull out the lambda 1 over n. Right, so we can change our indices to j's, and then we get k groups that look like this. Like this. But all of these terms are identical. We're just averaging lambda over the 2 design. And so each of these terms is equal to lambda average. So we get lambda average to the kth power. Lambda average composed with itself k times. Right. So I mean, yeah, this is sort of, we did like 5 steps of just rearranging terms, and then all of a sudden this pops out. Yes.
So we use the measure of the 2 design to move from defining the average, which is on board down here with the integral, to have some.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the whole point of the 2 designs, is to move from the integral to the sum. And we could do it because our formula inside the integrand was a polynomial of degree 2 or less. Okay, and now we have lambda average to the k. It turns out if you take a depolarizing channel to the kth power, you get a nice formula. So we have, I guess I can probably do it here. We have lambda average of rho is equal to p rho plus 1 minus p identity over d. We have lambda average squared of rho is equal to lambda average p of rho plus 1 minus p identity over d. Now we know that quantum channels are linear, so we can say that this is equal to p times lambda average rho plus 1 minus p lambda average identity over d. And then we apply definition of lambda average again to get p rho plus 1 minus p identity over d plus 1 minus p. If you plug in identity over D into here, you get identity over D plus identity over D. It's identity over D. And then you collect terms, and you get a P squared row. And then you get a 1 plus P times 1 minus P identity over D, which is equal to 1 minus P squared identity over D. And if you use induction, what you'll find is that this is equal to P to the K rho plus 1 minus P to the K times identity over D.
Okay,
so now we're in the home stretch. So the final thing we need to do is show that that value of Q is approximately equal to that exponential decay. So let's start with Q, K, which is equal to 1 over L. So remember, we weren't averaging over all possible sequences up there. That would be inefficient. The number of Cliffords grows exponentially with the number of qubits. We were only integrating over a fixed number L of them. So let's do that. Okay. We can plug in the definition of QK. Okay. And then we can move this sum into the trace. So it's the trace of E naught. And then here's where I'm going to skip a detail under the rug. So instead of averaging over all possible indices like we did in that formula over there, we're only averaging over L of them. But this is approximately equal to the average over all of them. It turns out that the error of this approximation shrinks exponentially with the size of L. So you only have to do a modest number of L. The L does not grow exponentially with the dimension of the Hilbert space. Usually in experiments, people set L to like a number less than 100. So it's really not that many, even for even for many qubits. And then we have a formula for this. It's equal to the trace of E naught lambda composed with lambda average to the k of rho naught. Now we just need to rearrange a bit to make it look like that A P to the K plus B form. So if we combine the coefficients of p to the k, we get this thing. So this is our a. And this one is the only constant term. So we get plus trace E naught lambda B. Great. And importantly, P only depends on lambda. So that's the protocol. As I said, there are many variations. This particular protocol measures the average fidelity of lambda. There's a protocol which measures how much of your quantum state leaks out of your Hilbert space into the environment. There's another protocol which measures how much of lambda is unitary and how much of it is decoherent. And then there are other protocols that measure various things. But yeah, this is sort of the vanilla version of randomized benchmarking. Right. Any questions?